Welcome to Reality Sandwich. I'm your host, Dr. Ray Ferrick Biggs, and today's theme will be moving through change and transition. This morning we have a very special guest. His name is Dr. Richard Strozzi-Heckler. Richard has a PhD in psychology and a 6th degree black belt in Aikido. He's a nationally known speaker and coach and consultant on leadership and mastery. He's the president of the Strozzi Institute, offers coaching and consulting to individuals, organizations on 5 continents. For the past 40 years, he has coached thousands of executives from Fortune 500 companies, NGOs, startups, technology, and nonprofits. Richard is the author of 7 books, including the nationally acclaimed Leadership Dojo, In Search of the Warrior Spirit, and The Anatomy of Change. Richard, how are you this morning?
Ray, it's really good to hear your voice.
Yes. Welcome.
Thank you.
This is our first inaugural episode of Reality Sandwich, and like I mentioned earlier, the themes for today and for the upcoming episodes will be on moving through change. And so maybe you could just share with the listeners a little bit more about your background and your view on change and leadership.
Thank you. Thank you, Rafe. What I think I'd like to say is that I'm really, my work is informed by 3 major domains. One is that is the martial art Aikido. I've actually been studying martial arts since I'm about 12 years old, and I started with judo and jiu-jitsu, but for almost 40 years I've been practicing and teaching Aikido. And the principles of Aikido, which means being in harmony with energy or universal energy, are very applicable for people learning, moving through change, and leadership. The other 2 domains are, I have been doing a contemplative meditation practice since the late 60s, which I still do. And my PhD is in psychology, but I was really interested in what is it that, how do people attain mastery, how do they excel, and how do people of mastery coordinate well together to make high-performing teams. So those 3 areas, I would say, you know, if I would summarize them, is that my studies in a body-oriented psychology, what I learned was the importance of moods and emotions that we have to pay attention to in terms of change. That meditation showed me that we can actually cultivate our attention, and we can build the muscle of concentration and of mindfulness. And the martial arts has taught me that how we can stay centered while taking action, how we can stay present, open, and connected while being in action and in positions of conflict. That's in really brief is my background. And the other thing I'd like to say about change is that our institutions, from my point of view, have failed us in teaching us how to move through change. You know, we can know what the capital of France is, and we can know the formula of relativity and at what temperature the water boils. But we're really not taught how we move through different stages of our life, how companies and organizations and teams move through certain stages, as well as nations. And this is a very pivotal thing that's lost, because if we look around, we see how much change there is and how confusing that is for us. My particular point of view on change is the notion is that how can we contact the great currents and rivers of energy that move through us, the animating principle that different cultures would call ki or chi or elan vital, prana, and how they can inform us of how we can elegantly and skillfully and wisely and compassionately move through change.
Very interesting. So, Richard, I'm curious, a lot of our listeners or some of our listeners out there may be executives or managers and organizations. And how would you work with me if I was an executive in a corporation, I'm dealing with conflict with a particular individual? What would be your approach or advice for me?
Well, I'm in terms of this general conversation here, because I don't think it's such really like a cookie cutter that I could say that. But in the general conversation, I would, number one, I would say, what is the really the concern that you're dealing with? What breakdown is that creating for you? And what is the possibility or the benefit if you're actually able to move through it? So we'd really establish what it is that we're working with and what are our ideas of success. Mm-hmm. And then I would show people certain practices and what we would call somatic practices. And maybe I'll take a moment, Rafe, and speak about somatics. Somatics is a branch of psychology as well as philosophy. It's an ancient Greek word. And I think that one could think of it as, if we roughly translate it, as the subjective aspect of our livingness. In other words, that we think we have these senses that are located in our body, and we smell from there, and we listen from there, and we taste from there, etc. But when we think of all those together, we think that we have a subjective view of ourself and then of the world, which is not in a fixed place, so that we're able to move our attention inwardly through our body or outwardly, and that allows us to take certain kinds of actions and generate certain moods and things. So with that notion, I would work with a client somatically. I would work directly through their body and teach them a number of practices that would help them deal with this conflict or deal with this conundrum that they're working with. For example, we have a practice we call centering. It's appropriated from Aikido. Mm-hmm. And what centering means is that you're present to the other people and you're present to your environment. You're open to possibilities, and you're connected, or you're grounded in your values and your principles. Now, that's nothing new in terms of leadership development or conflict resolution, but mostly people see that as a bumper sticker. And what we really practice doing is how that becomes part of who you are. It's just not an insight or an idea. It actually becomes who you are, so that you're able to feel yourself in a different way, become self-organizing, so that you can actually take the action, even in a moment of conflict and of heat, and where people are really bumping heads, and you can stay present and not fall into your conditioned reaction, for example. So it would be introducing people to certain kinds of practices that they would then embody new behaviors and new actions that would help take care of the dilemmas or opportunities that they're dealing with.
Very interesting. Thank you, Richard. I also was thinking just about the nature of change and how so many people are dealt with news of they have cancer or some kind of illness. And how would somatics be effective in helping people deal with, let's say, cancer, for example, and they're trying to figure out how to heal themselves? What would be some applications of somatics for that person?
Well, the fundamental piece of the somatics, and the most simple way to really explain it, is that it's creating this possibility that we can feel ourselves more deeply. We can sense and feel ourselves more deeply. That doesn't mean, Rafe, that we have a feeling mm-hmm. about something, but that we're actually able to contact the animating principle inside of us, which has a history of 3 billion years of life, and begin to build a certain quality of listening and embodiment in it, in which it can inform us about how we might want to move with this kind of a situation like cancer, the certain kind of actions we might want to take with it. And I want to say something here about this notion of feeling, is that we make the claim that one of the reasons that we can so easily soil our planet and our water and our air is because we are out of touch with our bodies. We're unable to feel ourselves deeply. Mm-hmm. One of the reasons that most conflict now escalates very quickly to violence is because we're out of touch with our bodies and our feeling self. And the growing gap between those that have and those that do not have has a great deal to do with our inability to feel ourselves. And what that means is that if we're really unable to feel ourselves, is that it's very difficult to feel others, and it's very difficult to feel other living systems. From that lack of feeling and connection, compassion, or empathy, it's a very short step into doing violence to others and doing violence to our air, our water, our minerals. So this whole notion of feeling ourselves, for example, that if one hears that they have cancer, that's certainly a wrenching grab for them. And usually what happens in news of that sort is that we'll begin to contract, and our thinking won't be as clear. Our emotional alignment is all over the place, and we become out of sorts with ourselves. And what somatics has to offer here, the work that we do, is people get back in touch with the life force that's moving through them, being able to center around that, and then listen to what, aside from what good medical advice that you could get, and integrative medicine good advice that you could get, what is your body actually telling you? And by listening close to our bodies this way, opens the possibility of new actions and new behaviors.
That's very interesting. I'm just reminded, Richard, of as some of our listeners know, I have a spinal cord injury that happened about almost 6 years ago. It left me paralyzed from the chest down. And initially, I had absolutely no feeling or sensation below my chest. And I was fortunate enough to have studied with you before my injury for many years and went through all the different somatic training. And for me, it definitely created a stronger ability for me to tune into the subtle energy that I can now feel in my legs and in my feet. And now it's interesting. It's not a normal sensation, but I definitely have a lot more awareness. And I can tell when my body starts to get contracted, whether it's a physical contraction or emotional contraction. And using the practices of centering and opening has been really incredibly valuable for me to learn how to heal my body. So that's been a very rich experience and something I want to share with other people that that maybe don't have that awareness or that sensibility.
Can I ask you a question about that, Rafe?
Sure, absolutely.
That I know that you've done a lot of work there, and as you know, I followed your progress and what you're doing. In terms of what you just explained of having a different kind of and more subtle awareness, do your physicians, or does Western science have any explanation for that at this point?
Well, it's interesting. Their explanation is that what you're feeling is phantom pain. And because now there are definitely signals they're getting through, because I do have in certain positions I can push a little bit with my legs and get some movement. So there are some intact signals. And what I've been doing is simply trying to strengthen those signals, both by physical exercise, but also through visualizing the energy moving through my legs and imagining the energy moving back up. And then also just visualizing the movements. And I've been doing that pretty consistently for the past almost 6 years. And anyone that I've ever met who's been able to walk again or get more function back has done that by simply and most profoundly just intending for the leg to move and continuing to exercise even when there's no movement. And over time, you know, some people have the experience of being able to walk again, not everyone. But again, it's knowing that it's possible, I think, makes a huge difference.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Just occurs to me right here is that your articulation of that process that you're in and the changes in that process is actually a very clear and grounded articulation of the possibilities of somatics.
Yeah, absolutely. It's been I feel really blessed to have learned much of this knowledge before my injury, and it's one of my missions with Soma Evolution, which is my organization, is to help share this with other people, no matter what kind of trauma they've gone through, whether it's a physical trauma, emotional, sexual trauma, that to share that there are many possibilities out there for healing that perhaps are not very well understood by a lot of Western science. But it's also my impression that as people become more aware of yoga, meditation, some of these more Eastern philosophies become more mainstream, that opens people to becoming more more aware of it and be able to apply it.
Yeah, you know, the as you know, we really move in the tides and currents of an interpretation of the body that is very Cartesian based and Western based, and while that has achieved a lot of benefits for us, it really does see the body as a machine. Mm-hmm. And even equating it with like a computer, or we give it input and then output happens. And by looking at it as a machine, I think that we so limit that. Especially, we know that disciplines and traditions in the East have for millennium looked at the body really as a portal into these higher levels of awareness that have to do with taking effective action in the world, to being able to manage and our emotions in a positive way, and as a doorway into our spiritual life as well. And while we've created great medical possibilities, I think that we're just now beginning to open up to this other way of being. And I think a lot of what you're doing and what we're doing at Strozzi Institute, and you know, we're sister institutions, is really marrying those two traditions.
Very good. Richard, another question that popped in my mind is, with so many of these troops that are coming back from Afghanistan and Iraq that have all kinds of trauma, both physical and emotional trauma, what are the possibilities that somatics could offer them in being able to deal with and heal from their trauma?
I think that it offers a tremendous, tremendous amount. There are people inside of the organization here at Strozzi Institute up in Petaluma that are going out into bases. We have three people that do this, and they get deployed to American bases, both in continental U.S. and outside of here. And they work with families and the returning soldiers and Marines and airmen and sailors to help them integrate that experience and to heal from the trauma. There's a program going on down in San Diego out of Balboa Hospital, where these young Marines, when they're coming back, is that they are practicing Aikido in a very informed way, and they find that it's just so much more effective than talking psychotherapy. Mm. Or in combination with talking psychotherapy, is just so much more effective. And we really look at it that the trauma is actually resides or has a landing place in the tissues. And if that contraction isn't being able to unwind or release out of the tissues, the trauma will be locked inside there. So all the way from a working with awareness and people paying attention to their bodies in a particular way, to hands-on manipulation of the tissues, to certain kinds of breath work, to certain kinds of movement patterns with other people, is that all that can be unwound for people. Mm. So we're kind of on the pointy end of the spear there, but we are introducing that kind of work for returning veterans.
That's great. It's fantastic. It's very, very much needed in the world, and it's great that you're supplying that education.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
So, Richard, I think we're going to take a break in just a few minutes, so everyone can hold on, and we'll be back in about four minutes.
Very good.
Do
You're listening to KPOO San Francisco 89.5. This is Reality Sandwich, and my name is Dr. Ray Ferrick Biggs. And we are currently have an interview with Richard Strozzi-Heckler of the Strozzi Institute. And for you, for those of you that are just tuning in, we've been talking about a lot of different things around healing, change, the field of somatics, and the implications it has for helping soldiers come back from the war. And Richard and I were just talking in the break about the issues of social justice and change. So, Richard, why don't you share a little bit more about what your point of view is around these topics?
Yeah, good. You know, maybe I'll start with the history of somatics, this branch of psychology and philosophy, which has to do with the living body, the subjective living body and its wholeness. Really started maybe in the late 50s and into the 60s, and really set its spear in the ground around healing modalities. And if the listeners have some kind of a knowing or a background in things like Rolfing or Feldenkrais work or polarity work or even deep levels of massage and touch, informed touch, it has done really tremendous work there, and as well as working with trauma. And I would say that I think that as we move in the beginning of this century, is that the next level of work for somatics is really working with people and how we can really address issues, leadership issues of environment, of social equity, and of the whole environmental predicament that we've authored for ourselves. And one of the things that we have made a major in and a stake in the ground now at the Strozzi Institute is working in with people who are in the social justice field, in the progressive field, and how to develop leadership through the body in those domains. And when I say through the body is that I would bring forward a quote by a man named Albert Mehrabian, who's a professor emeritus at UCLA. Many years ago, wrote a book called Silent Messages, and basically he was asking why is somebody credible, or why would we trust somebody? Why would we trust a leader, or why wouldn't we? So leaders, let's say, in the social justice field. And his longitudinal study over 40 years in widely varying cultures basically always shows up that people listen 93% presence. In other words, that's how you're being, your comportment, the sound of your voice, the rhythm of your voice, how you're actually self-organizing yourself and presenting or presencing yourself in the world. And that people listen 7% content. So truthfully, we do build trust by fulfilling on our promises. But what we've seen over and over again in all the research shows is that as the human animal, the Homo sapiens sapien, is we are looking at the other's presence and feeling the other's presence. And it's out of that that we will take that next step forward and say, I'll stay in the conversation with you and I'll listen with you. And I'll move into the next step forward. So that is the primary pivotal point for our work with all leaders, but also with this new declaration and agenda that we have of working with people in the social justice field, which I would say that my understanding is that there's become a certain realization that it's not only a systemic work that needs to be done, and it certainly needs to be done, but also the importance of individual transformation. And our work at Strozzi Institute, while it includes healing work and healing from stress and from trauma, is really what we're looking at, is how do people transform themselves into exemplary leaders through certain kinds of somatic practices.
That's very interesting. I was just thinking about when I come into a room of people, I just listen. Oftentimes, when I listen to my body, is there's certain people I want to move towards, and some people I want to move away from. And that, I think, alone, developing that skill is very powerful, because then it begins, there's some level of trust that we develop with people, and we may not understand it cognitively, or we don't really have all the reasons for whether we trust someone or not. But if we really listen to our gut and listen to the messages that are coming in, oftentimes there's tremendous information there. And that's, we, I think, sometimes discount that and just try to figure things out more intellectually. So what you're suggesting is to really listen to those subtleties and listen more to your body versus just from your head. Is that true?
Yeah, I think that the if we start to become a little more self-examining and self-reflective around the notion of why do we dismiss certain people just outright? Mm-hmm. And why do other people we say, no, I like being around them. I like their, what is it, I like their mood or like how they are. Or some people would say they would maybe fire one vendor for something, and we would say, well, weren't they delivering? They'd say, well, they're delivering, but I didn't like how they were. I didn't like how they were being. And I think the more that we examine that, we can see that it has a lot to do with our mood, which is a bodily phenomenon. Mood and attitude aren't a mental phenomenon. We carry that in our body. We can see anger. We can see resentment. We can see sourness. We can see bitterness in people's body, regardless of what they're saying out of their mouth. We can see dignity. Dignity is in people's bodies. And we can see people who carry themselves with dignity despite the overwhelming pressures of their life, either physical or economic or class, is that they are able to move with dignity, and we see that, and it moves us in a particular kind of area of respect. Are we in somatics, we say that learning isn't just taking on information, like there's going to be a download from my mind to your mind, but learning means that the person will ultimately be able to take an action they couldn't previously take. That's really what learning is, not that they just know something more. And that appears in our bodies, too. And I think the more that we become self-reflective in this way is that we begin to see that we have much more control over how we self-organize bodily. And when I say bodily, I'm always moving it away from this notion of physical education or PE or recess or something like that. It's really the whole human being, the whole body-mind, or the mind-body that we're really talking about here. And that inside of this notion of we have choice there, we remember those bio-cybernetic actions that control or choice follows awareness. So the more aware we are of our living self, the more choice we have in the world. And that energy or life follows attention. And where we put our attention, there will be more life there. And those aren't just really great insights or bumper stickers, but something that we can practice through our bodies.
That's fascinating. Richard, the thing you mentioned about dignity and that we can see dignity in another person's body, can you say more about that? Like, how would I see dignity? Just say a little bit more about how somatics could help someone understand that.
Well, I think that there's essentially what we will be drawn towards is life, and how an individual or a team or an organization or perhaps even a nation, citizens, allow their energy to move, allow their life to come to the foreground and to connect with other life. Mm-hmm. I'll take a slight digression here, but in Aikido, do means the way, and it's made up these Japanese kanji of a throat, a person, and a road. Is the way. Now, why would that be? Because what it means is the throat or the jugular vein is really the central core of ourselves, the central core of where our life, we cut through that, we die. And then there's a person on a road, so it means that there's a person walking towards life, life towards life. And when we see individuals who are allow this life to move through them. And I don't mean that it's helter-skelter and it's just doing what they want to do, but it moves through them in an organized, free-flowing, wise, compassionate, and skillful way. We say that this is a person of dignity, and we're drawn, and we're drawn towards them. You know, I often say that in this notion of semantics, a way to understand it is that there are people that I know who are blind, and I know them well, and they're some of the most perceptive people that I know. Mm-hmm. And there are people that like yourself, who don't have active use of your legs, but you're one of the most grounded people that I know. Or people who, I had a client, a woman who had no arms, congenitally no arms, but she was able to, had a tremendous ability to reach out for others. Mm. And in all these cases, really what we're looking at is that how we're allowing our life force, our energy, which is really a very spiritual endeavor and a spiritual question, to move through us. And that can be seen in a person's eyes, it can be seen in their skin, it can be seen in their comportment and how they speak and how they engage with the life around them.
Mm. You know, I'm also, I'm just reminded of something I learned years ago when studying with you, is this notion that our physical bodies are made up of three dimensions, length, width, and depth. And how dignity oftentimes is representative of having a certain amount of length in the body, being tall. Well, not necessarily tall, but, you know, having that vertical line, where someone who is more collapsed, you know, we oftentimes have the assessment that a person doesn't have as much dignity. And that alone, like just being able to be aware of your posture, just, you know, opening the chest and opening the shoulders, I notice that makes a huge difference in my mood, just having that awareness. And then, you know, the other thing you mentioned around width is more of a social dimension. You know, if our shoulders are more collapsed, we don't have as much, maybe we have more boundaries, or we're not as open to connecting socially. And then the dimension of width, of being able to move, if we're leaning forward, we may be ahead of ourselves or leaning back, a little bit more stuck in our past or history. But those notions for me continue to be very useful, and then finding a kind of a middle ground of where we're centered and those dimensions are aligned. Is you want to say anything more about that? Is that useful, do you think?
Yeah, thank you. I think that one of the things we could probably highlight in what you're saying is just the notion of that the somatic practices and the somatic sensibility is very operational and very, very, very pragmatic. In other words, that that if we stand up straight, if our head and our shoulders and our hips and our knees are aligned, then we're not fighting gravity. Mm-hmm. And if we're not fighting gravity, we have more energy to relate to others and to relate to the world. Mm-hmm. And I think that people, even at a very unconscious level, if we are tipped forward with our heads or our shoulders, then we have to exert tremendous amount of energy on the posterior, the backside of our body, to contract so we don't fall forward into gravity. In other words, what we're doing is we're in an internal fight or struggle, and really what we're struggling with is the energetic field of the planet, which is gravity. Yeah. And we have this feeling like, oh, here's a person, and we might not articulate it like that, but we see them in this struggle, and that may make them less magnetic or less persuasive or influential to us. I think the other thing, too, is that what you brought forward was this whole notion of the choice we have in that. And so inside of that, we say, then I can come up straight. I don't have to be tipping forward on my toes or back on my heels. That I actually have that choice about how I'm going to self-organize. And what that means, you know, a very interesting story I put in my book in the Leadership Dojo was President Lincoln interviewing somebody for a cabinet position. And he was in there with one of his assistants, and he interviewed the man for about an hour or so. And then the man left, and the assistant said, "Well, what do you think?" And he says, "No, I didn't like him. I'm not going to hire him. He would not be a good cabinet minister." And he said, "Well, why was that?" And Lincoln said, "I didn't like his face." And the his assistant was really incredulous about it and outraged, and he said, "Wait a minute, are you telling me you're not going to hire this person because of his face? And that's outrageous." And Lincoln said, "After 40, everybody's responsible for their face."
Very interesting.
And I think, of course, what he's saying here is that what he could see in this man's face, the life that he had been living for the past 40 years or 45 years or 50 years, and that he might have seen resignation or a deep-seated anger or resentment inside of it. And what we can say is by noticing our bodies is that we have an opportunity to shift certain patterns and shift certain themes so that we become different selves in the world.
Richard, earlier you mentioned that our body is a portal for individual transformation, and I strongly agree with that. I teach yoga and meditation, and one of the things that I battle with my clients is trying to bring them into their body. I was thinking maybe you could give our listeners maybe a basic exercise or something that they could be mindful of to help them get out of their chaotic monkey mind and into their bodies a little bit.
Yeah, good. Thank you. This is what I would suggest. So I'm going to assume here that many of you listening out there are seated. Or if you're not seated, you may be standing. And the first thing that you can do, and this you can repeat over and over again as your hours and minutes and days go by, is bringing your attention, let's say if you're seated, bringing your attention to your sit bones. That line where there's a contact of your seat, of your butt, to the chair. If you take your attention there, there's something you'll begin to notice. It could be a temperature difference. You could say on a range, do you notice that it's warmer or colder? You can feel this on your back on the chair as well. You can ask yourself, what is the shape of that sensation? And you can ask yourself, is there movement there? Do I feel a pulse? Do I feel a streaming? Do I feel something opening or something contracting? All that is really inside of the distinction of sensation. And sensation is the building block of life. If we feel the sensation in our bodies, we begin to move out of our ideas about life, our escaping from life, the fantasy of the past or the present, and just being very present in our bodies right now. So it's really that notion of taking your attention and bringing it to, in my example, would be your sit bones. You could take it to your back on the chair. You could take it to the soles of your feet. You could take it to the rhythm of your breath as the breath expands and then releases, as it expands and releases. And stay with that for a while. Just allow yourself to be very, very curious what it's like to live in that level of life. And inevitably, and as Rob, I know, as you teach this, is that people will see that your mind will take off in one direction or another, or as you said, like a monkey mind.
Right.
It'll take off in one direction or another. And when that happens, you just simply bring it back. Now, what we know by doing that is there's this huge benefit of your cortisol levels can go down, that chemical that will produce stress. Your blood pressure can balance out. Your heart rate can. And your breath will be more rhythmic. Now, when that happens to you, it's clinically impossible to be anxious. So at a very, very basic level, but a vital level, it's a great medicine. It's just the great medicine for anxiety.
Very interesting. Richard, thank you so much for sharing much of your wisdom and advice around dealing with so many different issues around change and stress and anxiety and all these other very important issues that I'm sure many of our listeners are dealing with. If people want to get in touch with you, can you share what's your website or what's a good way for them to get in touch with Strozzi Institute?
Yes, our website is, the usual prefixes of www.strozziinstitute. That's one word, Strozzi Institute, and at the end of Strozzi, there's another I that they're right together there. StrozziInstitute.com is our website. Our phone number is 707-778-6505.
Excellent. And also, I just want to let the listeners know, if they want to get in touch with me, they can check out Soma, S-O-M-A, Evolution, all one word, .org. And my phone number is 415-377-9098. We also offer coaching and consulting for individuals, organizations. And anything else, Richard, that you'd like? We have a few more minutes. Anything else you'd like to share?
Well, it's really a pleasure to be on your virginal launch here. And I think that we'll look back in a year and in 5 years and see where your program has gone. You and Rob have taken it. And that I would just like to reiterate again is that the notion of being able to feel ourselves is not a soft science, or it's not a soft action, and it doesn't mean that you are having a feeling. It just means that along with our ability to think rationally and logically, there's a tremendous unused intelligence that is from the eyebrows down. And so our brain goes all the way down there, all the way down to the soles of our feet. And by not paying attention to this part of ourselves and letting it atrophy, we're really letting atrophy a huge amount of potential that we have in our life. And that by bringing our attention back to the living body opens up tremendous, tremendous possibilities for everybody.
That's fantastic. Thank you so much, Richard, for being on the show and, again, sharing everything you've shared. So we're going to be signing off. You've been listening to Reality Sandwich. Tune in next week, same time, 12 noon on Thursday, for another interesting show. We have a life coach named Anjali who will be sharing some of her wisdom and some of her practices with you as well. So have a great week, and we'll be talking to you soon.